From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. George Christensen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to this, the final hour of the George Christensen Show. I'm George Christensen, joining you until about 7 p.m. And in the next hour, we're going to be talking to someone who is, proudly I've got to say, a mate of mine. His name is Peter Campion. He's a retired Queensland Fire and Rescue Service fire commander and fire investigator. He's a former Department of Social Security fraud investigator. But more importantly, Peter is an independent researcher. He's a climate skeptic and, or I should say, an energy realist. He's a libertarian. He's a fierce proponent of the traditional Australian values that have increasingly come under attack since about the 1990s. More so, he's a prolific contributor to newspaper opinion columns all over Australia, and he has been for many, many years, over 1,000 letters published. I would have to say Peter Campion would probably be the most published letter to the editor-writer in the country. He was actually the platform from major newspapers in 2020 when he was spitting out some truth bombs about COVID-19 and the lockdowns and the jab and, you know, all the rest of it. And that actually prompted him to put down the pen and pick up the cudgels, and he strapped on his boots and he signed up as a candidate for the 2020 Queensland election and then the 2022 federal election. Well, after all the truths that they were telling us were conspiracy theories started being proven as true, his media ban was lifted in about August of 2022. So Peter's back with the pen, furiously writing, telling the world his thoughts. Along with that letter writing, which I've got to say, I'm not being flippant about it. This is citizen activism at its very best. We need people to do more of what Peter does and put their thoughts into the local papers because that's how we spread freedom, people, by spreading our ideas. We do that by writing letters. We do that by public speaking. All of that's under attack these days, but Peter keeps on doing it. He's been married for 38 years. He's got five kids, the eldest being well-known journalist Vicky Campion, who is partner to the former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce. So we've got Pete from North Queensland on the line. How are you going, Peter?
George, I'm excellent, and thank you very much for what you do on TNT Radio and on your website and for what you did in Parliament. And I'd just like to say g'day to all the red-pilled TNT Radio listeners out there tonight. I've almost got a little tear in my eye. It's just, it's so good to know that we have someone prepared to fund TNT Radio, that we have people prepared to tune in live, to listen to the podcast, which is what I normally do. And it's good to know that, that there are others fighting. And as you said then in your intro, your very excellent intro, there isn't enough really conservative or free thinking or libertarian writers or contributors to legacy media, to the totally corrupt and controlled corporate media. The left organized, the left are social, you know, it's inherent to socialism. So it's very easy for them to get their morning email and pick up their talking points and send in their letters and their texts to the editors. Not all papers run text, but a lot of them do. But yeah, as you mentioned, I've been doing it for a long time, and the reason for that was I think I was only in my early teens when I started, so you know, over 45 years ago, and it was because the local newspaper, I mean, in those days in Far North Queensland, we had one commercial TV, one ABC TV, and one commercial radio, and I think two ABC radio, and one newspaper. Mm. The local newspaper printed something that I knew not to be true about the Cairns mudflats because I lived right next to them, and we used to go mudboarding, catching crabs with crabbing poles. And I mean, these days that's a rescue helicopter if they saw a tribe of kids out on the mud. But they were blaming the SS Trinity Bay dredge for creating the mudflats and ultimately pinning the blame back to the Americans in World War II. And of course, there's nothing of the sort. It's an old river mouth, that Trinity Inlet. It's after the isostatic rebound of the last ice age, the Mulgrave River, its course was diverted from Trinity Inlet southwards to where it currently comes out. It joins up with the Russell and comes out at Dirrell Heads there. But It was the river mouth for untold thousands of years, and it was the sediment that had been deposited there that had come down from the tablelands over eons. And of course, when the first settlers of Cairns came, they cleared the mangroves, and there was a strip of sand there. Everyone would say, "Oh, no, it used to be a lovely sandy beach." No, it was never a sandy beach. And in fact, the mudflats that were so full of life when I was a kid were destroyed by the Greenies and the council trying to turn the mudflats into a beach. So all the the mudskipper lives, the wading birds, all gone. So there's always unintended consequences with the Green Left's actions, it's not entirely accidental, George. This is the thing: if you look at virtually any of the modern Green Left narratives, they're intended to destroy everything that works, everything that's functional about our society, everything that we've built up over generations, everything that we've learnt. There's so much. Not only misinformation and disinformation in the mainstream media, it comes from academia, it comes from government departments. It's when you actually take time to dig back to first principles in all these things, as I've done over the last 11 years, or I actually had to take early retirement from the fire brigade and with accumulated injuries. And consequently, I found one of the better ways to deal with pain was to dig very deeply into research, dig out the original research papers, and read the damn things to relearn. I mean, I revisited chemistry and physics when I trained as a forensic fire investigator, but there's obviously a lot more advanced stuff than you use in fire investigation required to understand these papers. And we're heading for a climate disaster, don't get me wrong, but it has absolutely nothing to do with what the Green Left is currently talking about. It's to do with a sinusoidal spiral density wave field that emanates from the center of the galaxy. And that would take a whole other hour to go through, so I won't go down that rabbit hole tonight.
Right, right.
But certainly within the next 24 years.
You've intrigued me. Maybe we'll get you on again to talk about that. I can't even pronounce what you just said, let alone know about it. So, I get that what has driven you then from the story you talked about, the mudflats before, what has driven you then to be such a prolific letter writer is just seeing lies in the press, lies in the mainstream fake news media, and you're also seeing just utter rubbish come out of governments. And so you've been propelled to rebut this through the power of the pen. In all of your writings, is there any common theme? Is there any common issue or an issue that you burn the most about?
Well, I guess all the current narratives driven by the organisations are effectively all one organisation, but Club of Rome, Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the UN IPCC, the UN itself, the World Economic Forum, they're all the same group of elite globalists.
This is the globalist elite, the establishment, the so-called elite, I should say. I think Malcolm Roberts has turned to calling them the global predators, but the establishment, exactly, the establishment, we should say.
Yeah, the predators, the global predators. I saw Malcolm Roberts coin that phrase, and I thought, yes, that's very good. I think I've spent more ink on the climate fiction and renewable fiction than I have on anything else. But recently I've been pointing out that the inflation that we're experiencing is a direct consequence of government policy, as is the homeless shortage, as is the rising interest rates. And none of it's accidental. It all comes back to deliberate strategies. Now, when we're talking about the global elites or the global predators, I've got to get my terminology right. But there's some basics that we've got to consider about them. That they long ago mastered transferring wealth from us to them. All right, so they're not short of money. They love complex long-term plans. That they call themselves the Illuminati, the enlightened ones, or the readers, because they have access to all the knowledge from all the civilizations since the last disaster of the galactic electromagnetic sheet reversal 12,000 years ago. It's a cyclical thing, but again, I won't go down that rabbit hole tonight. So they actually signal everything they're going to do to us by subtly telling us what they're planning to do, and they do it through books. Aldous Huxley's book, A Brave New World, is one fine example. Yep. And
well, mate, if there ever was a prediction about what the future is going to be like. It is indeed that book. Unbelievable. But I see what you're saying. What you're saying is perhaps that wasn't just a prediction. Perhaps that was a little bit of a hint to the people, this is what we're going to be doing.
Well, they believe they avoid the karmic consequences. You know, that they think that if they tell us what they're going to do, it's our fault if we go along with it. So they then abdicate any responsibility and any karmic backlash for what they actually do. But just before we leave Aldous Huxley behind, his brother Julian was very instrumental in establishing the global government in waiting, the United Nations. And he said, we must plan our eugenic policy. Now, last eugenicist was one Adolf Hitler. We must plan our eugenic policy along some such lines as the following. The lowest strata, allegedly less well-endowed genetically, are reproducing relatively too fast. Therefore, birth control methods must be taught them. They must not have too easy access to relief or hospital treatment, lest the removal of the last check on natural selection should make it too easy for children to be produced or to survive. Long unemployment should be a ground for sterilization, or at least relief should be contingent upon no further children being brought into the world, and so on. Now, you've got to remember, eugenics was the settled science of the Western academics of the 1920s and 30s. And who talks about that now?
Yeah, the science is settled, mate. Just kill everyone. Yep. I mean, these people were evil. But I take your point that, you know, we're told today certain things are settled, particularly the climate science, in inverted commas, because there's no such thing.
It's not even remotely accurate, George.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to that, because I know that as you said before, is what really grinds your gears.
Yeah.
Why, Peter? Why is that, of all the issues, the one that inflames you the most?
Well, it inflames me the most because it is designed to tear down the only civilization that has ever lifted people equally from slavery and poverty and despair and disease. And it's based on such an anti-empirical pseudoscience. It's insulting. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what proper physicists go through. You know, people that admire that love their art and their science, because, you know, at that level, science is almost an art. What it must do to them emotionally to know that they can't progress in academia, they can't be published unless they toe this ridiculous anti-scientific line. So just to get down to the specifics of it, this so-called claimed greenhouse effect is not a radiative phenomenon driven by the atmospheric infrared optical depth, as they claim, but it's the pressure-induced thermal enhancement analogous to adiabatic heating and independent of atmospheric composition. It doesn't matter what the atmospheric gas mix is, the planetary surface temperature is going to be precisely what it is now. Now, as you know, with the adiabatic lapse rate, pilots are very familiar with this. The higher you go, the cooler it gets. So in dry air, in the tropical belt, we're looking at about 10 degrees C decrease in temperature per kilometer of elevation. That is an artifact of the reduced atmospheric pressure. You see, that the major controllers of the surface temperature of Mars, Venus, both around 95% CO2, by the way, in the atmosphere, and Earth, and also three of the major moons in the solar system, is controlled by the strength of gravity and the mass of the atmosphere, which is more or less the same artifact there, and the total irradiance received. Now, that is that's sunlight, particularly sunlight. That's a big one, but it also includes the full range of electromagnetic radiation frequencies that come across. And there is an electric, purely electric component to that. People don't even realize there's an electric current that connects Earth to the sun, and in fact to the planets. It's the James Webb Space Telescope is starting to reveal this stuff, and it's got the traditional astronomical community having conniption fits that the whole universe is in fact electric, and there never was a Big Bang, George. That's another fiction. But anyway, the total solar irradiation is the major variable. They claim it never varies. Well, you know, there's a 12,000 year cycle that wipes out, you know, pretty much 90% of the membership of all species on Earth, and it's we've survived it before, but they're making very sure that we don't survive it this time because they don't say anything about it. We should have been preparing the same sort of underground cities that the Göbekli Tepe solar stones memorializes. That whole Kadachya area, if I've got the pronunciation right, of Turkey. All those major underground cities that they've discovered there over the years are an artifact of ancient civilizations surviving this cyclic event. Now, just to get back to the specifics of the current global warming fiction, the downwelling long wave radiation, look, they make so many claims about this. Okay, for a start, infrared doesn't penetrate water. The best infrared can do when it reaches the water surface is heat up the top fraction of a millimeter of water, which then evaporates, which has a net cooling effect. Water vapor is the major greenhouse gas, and it works as Earth's automatic thermostat, particularly around the wet tropical belt. As you know, the tropics is nearly almost all ocean. So thunderstorms, particularly cyclones and hurricanes and typhoons, which are all the same phenomenon, that they have a central updraft, which acts as a giant heat pump. It takes all the surface heat. Like when I was a fireman in Mareeba, we'd be out fighting a grass fire at the airport, very common, set off by their slasher, and a thunderstorm would come over, knock off the grass fire, and the temperature in the truck had dropped 10 degrees. Where'd that heat go? That's a lot of heat to just vanish in 5 minutes. It's not just the water cooling. It's the suction effect of this central pipe of these circular storms or just the updrafts of thunderstorms that aren't circular and spitting it out at the top of the troposphere where we live and up into the icy stratosphere. Mm. So the only light that can penetrate water and heat the 1.335 billion cubic kilometers of seawater on this planet is the visible light spectrum and a higher, and that is indeed, you know, if you've done skin diving and scuba diving, you'll know that, you know, 80 meters or so, you'll still got light down there in clear water, and that's what actually controls the overwhelming effect of warmth that we experience when the sun goes down. The water vapor from a water world that's heated by the ocean. The ocean has a million times more mass than the atmosphere. So there's actually a set of laws of physics relating to CO2's reaction, how it works with the spectral band. So all up, there's 37,000 spectral bands of electromagnetic frequencies come in from the sun, and water vapor intercepts all but three of them. And the most energetic of those gaps and the biggest gap is at the 14.8 microns wavelength. And that's described in Planck's law, which we can go into if you have time. The temperature of absorption at the 14.8 microns wavelength, as described by Wien's displacement law and Kirchhoff's law of thermal radiation, is minus 80 degrees Celsius. Now, the first place you're going to encounter minus 80 degrees Celsius in the atmosphere is in the lower stratosphere, a bit above where the jet airliners fly. Now, When the CO2 does manage to intercept an outgoing infrared photon, it absorbs it, re-emits it a billionth of a second later at a lower and less energetic frequency, and it continues on to outer space, because the second law of thermodynamics says that you cannot take heat energy from a cool system and return it to a hotter system. It only goes one way. In fact, if it went the other way, you'd be able to set up, perpetual motion machines of the second type.
And we'd certainly love to have one of them. Peter, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back on the George Christensen Show, part of TNT Radio, with Peter Campion after the break.
You should hear what David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan are talking about.
I assume that if they couldn't say for sure that there was going to be a weapons of mass destruction attack, you always have to err on the side of caution. But when I found out many years later that there was never any real threat, and the dossier was sexed up, as they called it, in order to make a case for the war. That really shook me to my core. That's one of the reasons I became a whistleblower, to say I'm all for the military, I'm all for the government, but the idea that our own people are actually doctoring evidence, it goes against everything that we stand for as a nation, everything that we are meant to be doing as military officers, and it is so wrong. If we do that, we become the bad guys of the world. If we lose our values, if we trample on human rights, we put people in jail, there's nothing left to defend.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated more than $310 million to mainstream media. We don't tell the story that Bill Gates wants you to know. We tell the real story. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show. I'm George Christensen, joined by prolific letter to the editor, writer, and North Queenslander, Peter Campion. Peter was just talking us through some stuff making my head spin, mate. It's like I'm going through a science lesson. I find it absolutely fascinating. So continue on the thought. We ended up with the was it the second law of thermodynamics
yes,
that you were talking
yes.
about there that would yes. be breached if what they said is true. Go ahead.
Continue, that's correct. My friend. That's correct. We could go into the Stefan-Boltzmann law and Stokes shift and Stokes law. But I think you think you've got the gist of it. Now, people say, well, particularly the Greens on the campaign trail. One thing I loved with being on the campaign trail, I mean, you know, I was banned from letters, and the 1992 High Court decision said that the one definite right that we have as Australians was the right to free political speech. So I figured that if I was actually an active candidate, it was much harder to shut me up. So the town debates between the candidates both within Hill in Queensland and within Kennedy in the federal election, I had the same Green opponent, and this poor girl only knew what she'd been told, which was all complete rubbish. And she said to me one time during the debate, "What about the Keeling curve?" Now, the Keeling curve is a measure of CO2 over time taken on one lower volcano, which is a major source of CO2 in its own right, but nonetheless. I said, well, it doesn't apply. And the reason it doesn't apply is that the atmospheric content of CO2 is an artifact of Henry's law. Now, Henry's law relates to the partial pressure of a gas above a liquid. So the warm tropical oceans expel CO2, much the same way as your beer or your champagne or your Coke, as it warms, produces bubbles. Now, when the water gets back down to the Arctic or Antarctic regions and cools again, it absorbs CO2. So it depends on how much sunlight these massive oceans of Earth's are getting as to whether or not it's going to absorb CO2. And, of course, at the moment, it's a warm spell. We're very fortunate to be living in an interglacial. We're not quite as fortunate as the life forms on Earth were about 8,000 years ago during the Holocene climactic optimum, which the Green Left never wants to talk about, when sea levels were actually 2 meters higher than now because of thermal expansion. And, you know, the life forms were all much bigger. There was way more CO2 in the atmosphere, but there's no real proxies available to record it on such short timescales. And, you know, the animals were bigger, people were bigger, insects were bigger. Everything was lush and healthy. The Sahara was much greener than it is now. But the point is that CO2 is rising now as a consequence of the continual warming from the last little ice age, which ended around 1850, started around 1350 AD and ended around 1850. And same with the sea level rise that we see. It's tiny, it's incremental, and it's exactly in line with the thermal expansion of a warming, very large warming ocean, absorbing a lot of heat from this massive, well, some people call it a nuclear reaction, but it's actually a lot more electrical than that in the sky, the sun. And there is absolutely no connection whatsoever between the CO2 that we – oh, sorry, getting back to this Keeling curve, I said, why didn't it drop during COVID? All these planes stopped flying. I mean, they're the emitters, for want of a better word, that deliver it straight to the upper atmosphere. All the planes stopped flying, or most of them did, except for the private jets, of course. The Predator class still got around. But
still flew into Davos.
Yeah, all these industries shut down. I mean, I keep a screen up on my third computer screen here showing the CO production across the globe. Now, carbon monoxide is an excellent proxy for man-made CO2 because CO2 is ubiquitous and well-mixed, whereas CO you can track to a point source. So China, when they locked down, their CO emissions collapsed. I mean, they sprang back a couple of months later because most of the news you get out of China is pure fiction. Same as most of the news you get out of Australia, for that matter. But so the whole thing is wrong and disingenuous. And it goes back so far, George. And it's all the same elite families or predator families that talk about this stuff. Like the Greens, this particular candidate loves to quote Svante Arrhenius. Now, Svante Arrhenius wrote a paper in 1896 about how carbonic acid was the cause of this heating effect. Well, if it worked as claimed, why don't we trap industrial waste heat in great big tanks of CO2 and recycle that heat for other processes? We don't, because it doesn't. Now, Svante Arrhenius was none other than one Greta Thunberg's great-great-great-great-great uncle. So, you know, it's the same families that keep tricking us over and over again. And it was one of Arrhenius's own students who pointed out that he hadn't evacuated the water vapor from his lab experiment. So, you know, it was a completely invalid experiment. So the Green Left have been pointing to this paper for over 100 years, nearly 130 years, and saying, this is the proof. Well, there was never the proof to start with. And, you know, and the disingenuous of every part of the argument, like calling CO2, which is the molecule, it's plant food. Let's face it, it's plant food. We exhale it. We can, like US submarines often have 8,000 parts per million CO2 in their atmospheres, and they only scrub it at 8,000 parts per million because it starts to displace oxygen at that level. We need oxygen, but it's not toxic. It's not a poison. It feeds plants, but they call it carbon. Now, carbon is a solid. Carbon is soot, basically. It's in your exhaust pipe. It's in your chimney. That's not a gas. It's a solid. And on top of that, if we're going to abbreviate and just say, oh, look, it's just an abbreviation, well, you know, the molecule is one carbon atom and two oxygen atoms, and each oxygen atom is heavier than the carbon atom. So by both mass and by volume, you should be calling it oxygen if you're going to abbreviate it to anything.
well, you know, obviously that doesn't fit with the dialectics that they want to propagate and you know, use to brainwash people. I mean, this is why the term carbon pollution, which, as you've already indicated, the first part of it's wrong and the second part of it's very wrong because it's a naturally occurring substance. It's the source. Well, it's a source of life continuing on this planet. Without it, it's not a pollution.
It's not just that we could die. We nearly did die 18,000 years ago during the last ice age, when the effects of Henry's law, the very large ocean, the ocean cooled, it absorbed masses of CO2. Now, are you familiar with the name Professor Patrick Moore?
I am familiar. He was a former Greenpeace
He was co-founder. One of the co-founders. Yes, co-founder of Greenpeace, largely written out of their history now.
That's right.
That was when Greenpeace was a legitimate organisation established to fight atmospheric nuclear testing, which was a very bad thing to do. And it was overrun. It was infiltrated, as inverted, as so many organizations are. If they're not expressly and religiously maintained as conservative, that they get run over and overtaken by the left. So 18,000 years ago, this is what Patrick Moore made his life study, the CO2 levels dropped to roughly 180 parts per million. Now, C3 plants, which is everything that's got a rounded sort of leaves with veins that come out in all different directions from a central vein, they die from a lack of CO2 at 150 parts per million. So we were just 30 parts per million from all the olive trees and plum trees and mango trees and gum trees and everything else dying. Now, had it dropped to 90 parts per million, that's the threshold for life for C4 plants, which are all your grasses, everything with parallel veins in the leaves. So we wouldn't have even had crops like grain. Everything would die at that point. So there is no upper limit. We can have 2,500 parts per million, and nothing's going to change temperature-wise. All that we would have is much bigger animals, much bigger trees, and abundant life. But anyway, I just want to touch on something else there with the way these people do these things. The UN IPCC models, so they're always pointing to their models, right? Oh, our models say that a doubling of CO2 will produce 1.5 degrees of global warming. Well, that's obviously wrong. It's not supported by the laws of physics. It's not supported by scientific empiricism. But guess how their models actually work. An astrophysicist by the name of Joseph E. Postma dug this out. I've got his excellent book on my desk in front of me here. And he says, the model Earth the alarmists build their energy balance equations on, that's that Keel-Trenbeth diagram that they love to trot out, is a flat disk, get this, a flat disk that receives continual sunlight that yields a surface temperature of minus 40 degrees Celsius. They are literally working from a model of a flat Earth and a cold sun. This is the extent of the lies, misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation that these people are continually spitting out and claiming to be true. Now, let's just drill in briefly to the actual sources of warmth on this planet, because there's seven major ones, and we touched on one earlier, which is the incredible amount of electromagnetic spectrum from the sun. Now, there's a lesser amount that comes from the rest of the galaxy as well. There's also the orbital variations, so the Milankovitch cycles. At the moment, we're in a particularly circular orbit, so that those variations aren't particularly big, except for axial progression, where the tilt at the moment, the southern hemisphere is hotter because the northern end of the axis is tilted slightly away from the sun. But that wobble, that central tilt to the rotational center of the Earth actually progresses around. It describes a circle. So the North Pole, as it's orbiting the sun, is also prescribing a little circle of its own. Now, those are three, but the adiabatic pressure lapse rate that I mentioned earlier is a fourth one. Volcanism is obviously one as well, and particularly it's not just the volcanoes we see above land. There's far, far more of them under the ocean. So many that they're not even mapped. And on top of that, the mid-ocean rifts, the actual spreading of the subduction plates of the planet that work around the planet like the seams on a baseball or something, they are constantly expelling superheated rock, which instantly cools in contact with the seawater. But that cooling process warms that water. Now, on top of that, we've got the heat of nuclear decay of the physical materials within the planet. So there's something like 800,000 cubic miles of uranium alone. And when we get, hopefully we'll have time to get onto the subject of the origin of hydrocarbons, which have pretty much nothing to do with dinosaurs. Maybe for coal, plant leaf matter and stuff, but certainly not for oil or gas. That they're both a construct of two things: is this decay of uranium and thorium and other physical materials inside Earth. But then on top of that, we're just so much disinformation out there. We're told that the core has an inner and outer, and they're both iron. But in fact, the inner core is plasma. So plasma is the fourth state of matter. Well, everyone's familiar with liquid, solid, and gas. But not many people realize that fire is the fourth state of matter. That's plasma. The flame of a fire is plasma. The northern lights is plasma. The southern aurora is plasma. So the Earth's inner core is solid plasma, and it's directly electrically connected to the sun, which in turn is connected to other suns via, well, they're called Birkeland currents, and they look suspiciously on the James Webb Space Telescope like DNA strands, twin streams twisted around each other. And it's occasionally they're a triple twisted strand, but that again is a whole other subject. So that we've got seven different sources for what actually drives the baseline surface temperature of the planet, with the two biggest ones being the adiabatic pressure and the total top of atmosphere radiation. But none of it has anything to do with the atmospheric gas mix. And the people that have been driving this narrative and destroying our energy systems and turning us one against the other know this full well. At the moment, they're going on about methane, for goodness sake. Well, for a start, if methane is as bad as claimed, why is it on other planets? If it's a product only of biology, particularly of cows, they don't ever talk about termites, which actually produce more methane than the entire world's cattle herd. But it's 1.7 parts per million. It breaks down very, very quickly. 4.5 days it breaks down. It's a reactive molecule. But the frequency bands under Wien's law at which it can intercept outgoing long-wave infrared radiation are 3.3 microns, which would occur at 600 degrees C, except there is no 600 degrees C atmosphere zone, and 7.7 microns, which is 104 degrees C. So the only chance they've got of intercepting any outgoing long-wave infrared radiation is if that methane happens to be directly atop a volcano. And there's just not that many volcanoes. So, yeah, they want to get rid of our delicious steaks and swap them out for bugs covered in chitons, which we can't digest. I guess a lot of people say that that these predator families are actually a human-reptile hybrid. Maybe they can eat bugs. Maybe they do have a digestive system. You know, there's a classic animated meme getting around of Klaus Schwab. The big, big, long reptile tongue comes out and licks cockroaches off his face and gobbles them down. So, yeah, I mean, if they are actually, who knows? Who knows? They could be. It's just there's so much we're not told. We can't categorize it.
I don't know about them being reptiles, but they're certainly inhuman by the things that they try to impose upon us, Peter. We're going to have to cut to another quick break here on the George Christensen Show as part of TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Remember when Nancy Pelosi's husband was brutally attacked by an intruder with a hammer? Horrible thing. In response, the left and their media mouthpieces made it clear that if you had ever spoken out against the congresswoman, especially as a politician, commentator, or someone with a high profile, you had Paul Pelosi's blood on your hands for what the criminal attacker had done. But I have heard no such claim made against one of the most famous actresses in the world, political activist Jane Fonda, who, a few weeks before the Nashville shooting, went on The View and suggested murder as a response to pro-life supporters.
We're not going back. I don't care what the laws are. We're not going back.
Besides marching and protesting, what else do you suggest?
Well, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not a miraculous... What did you say?
Murder.
Fonda claimed after the show that she was joking, but not while on the show. And I'm not saying that this trans who shut up the school ever saw Fonda's remarks, but you can see the obvious, sick, twisted, dangerous double standard in action. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Close your eyes and think about this. Imagine taking your child to school where all the other kids have access to textbooks, paper, and pencils, but your child is only allowed to listen. Would you be okay with that? That's what it means to be blind. For every 100 books a sighted child can access, a blind child has access to less than 5. Help put the world at the fingertips of vision-impaired kids. Donate now at braillehouse.org.au.
This is the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You're back for the final 17 minutes of the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. I'm George Christensen, joined by prolific letter to the editor writer, Peter Campion. Peter's been giving me a science lesson. I've got to say, the head spinning. So much information there, Peter, that you have just downloaded. I have to ask if we can depart from the science lesson for a while. I have to ask, how on earth do you accumulate all of this information? Where do you get it from? You must be, along with a prolific letter writer, you must be a prolific reader.
Yes, George, that's the essence of it. I read 7 weekly dailies in newspapers and another seven daily newspapers and 7 weekly newspapers, but I focus my main efforts on the dailies because they have a bigger audience. So from 5 a.m. to 9:30, 10 a.m., I'm reading and responding in newspapers. Then I go about my little farm here and do my daily stuff. And then of an evening, I'll sit down with a glass of red and read through the journals. I have, at any one time, I have 7 browser windows open, each with between 10 and 30 tabs permanently.
Sounds
open.
Like my computer.
Two computers.
Let's give the readers some resources. What are the top 3 news websites or information websites that are Peter Campion's go-tos?
Well, for American politics, I like to start with Gateway Pundit.
They're
quite excellent. For the scientific journals, George, there's just so many of them. At the moment, I've drifted away from any further research on renewables. For general climate renewable stuff, for an Australian website that's readily digestible, go to joannenova.com.au.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Yep.
If you want the American take on it, go to whatsupwiththat.com, which is WATTS up with that, all one word, .com, and just follow links from there. At the moment, I'm mainly following astrophysics, and consequently, I look at nature.com, springer.com, mdpi.com, eso.org, various universities, researchgate.net, agupubs.onlinelibrary.wiley, NASA.gov and JPL NASA.gov, only for really background stuff, because they're totally taken over by activists too, which is why they've said NOAA.gov, science.org, EGU Sphere, Copernicus.org, SETI.org, ARVIX is a pre-publication, that's ARXIV, ARVIX.org, they're a good place to get little things like that as well. And of course, I follow various scientists via their Telegram and Twitter and whatnot, and get directed to stuff that saves a lot of time. Not that I don't comment on those social media platforms, because again, it's for me, it's all about learning, and you never stop learning. But the products of my work, I just tallied that up during the ad break. So far this year, there's been 91 days. I've had 124 full size letters printed in papers, of which only 4 were in weeklies, because I've been a bit slack on the weeklies. So that's more than one a day. And that's
a pretty good tally.
If everyone did that, we could start drowning out some of these uninformed, misinformed green left. But before we leave the reptiles entirely, could I just briefly touch on brain function and brain structure? Because the inner layer of the triune human brain is the R complex, or the reptilian complex, the basal ganglia. That is that's our amygdala, our fight or flight reflex.
Fight or flight.
If you're ruled by the innermost, most primitive part of your brain, then
your reptilian thinking.
You could be reptilian thinking. So the next brain out is the paleo mammalian complex, the limbic system. And then the part we actually think with is the neomammalian complex, or the neocortex. So you and I are ruled by our neocortex, but are the predator class? You know, they crave total power and control, which we don't. They've decided they don't need 95% of us. They had that written on their Georgia Guidestones before they blew them up. They're inherently evil, satanic, demonic, and they feed on our pain and anguish, George. There's no other explanation for why they do what they do. Anyway, I'll leave it alone now.
Well, I'm hearing you. At some level, I don't know about the reptilian, but it's psychotic, at least psychotic thinking. Now, mate, this goes to a very good question. You segued into that. We've heard, you know, for the last three quarters of an hour, why the whole climate myth is a myth, what's really driving things. But why on earth do you think, and I'm really asking you to speculate here, or maybe you might be able to enlighten me with some actual hard evidence. Why do you think this predator class keeps on pushing this mantra? Why do they keep on pushing for more and more and more to be done for the climate? Man, I got a theory. I think that the whole push ultimately is one that is anti-human. But that's, again, just my speculation, although I can read that sentiment into some of what they say, particularly what the people who are just blatant about their anti-humanism, you can definitely read it in that. But what do you think is driving this agenda, Peter?
Well, the reason that they're progressing everything so quickly, particularly they're always using the end date 2030, is because they know what's coming on the galactic electromagnetic sheet reversal that I teased on earlier. 2030 is about when we're going to see the end of reliable electricity and reliable internet as a consequence of the plasma streams, the particle streams that are coming on this dual density, dust-coated, sinusoidal spiral field, electromagnetic field coming from the center of the galaxy. We cross it every 12,000 years. You know, it's a regular cycle. They've got all the information from all the civilizations since the last great disaster. Even the half cycle can be pretty damaging. And that was Noah's flood, described in the Bible, was the last half cycle event. They are working to get complete control by 2030 because they want to be able to retire to their underground Tesla-powered base. That's Tesla the scientist, not Tesla the electric car, which is located in a mainland area of Antarctica called Rothschild. And that is blurred out on each of the three satellite viewers that I use to look at the surface of the Earth. And it's blurred out because they don't want you to know it's there. But because they've got to tell us because of the karma thing that they believe in. Klaus Schwab actually tweeted a couple of years ago that he was off to a meeting in Antarctica. Well, where was that meeting? It wasn't any of the national bases. It was at the WEF, at the Global Predator Class's own base. Now, why are they meeting in Antarctica? Because after the sheet reversal and the pole shift, which is part of that, this is going to shock your audience, and maybe we'll do another talk on it. Antarctica winds up at the equator for the next 6,000 years. This is why there's alternating layers of fossils that are tropical origin and Arctic origin in the Arctic. And this is a massively suppressed piece of information. The CIA, the US establishment, they know full well about all this stuff. But so they've got to get all their ducks in a row by 2030 before the major method of mind control, the electronic media drops out, the electronic communications generally. We're going to lose the global positioning satellites and all the rest of it. And the war on completely abiotic hydrocarbons, which existed. So oil and gas, methane, for example, existed a good billion years before life on this planet, George. So how the heck is it an artifact of life? It's not. It's a consequence of nuclear decay in the core. So when you have a large complex atom that gets hit by a random high-speed particle, particularly a neutron, it will cause instability within that atom and it will divide. So if it divides, if say a uranium atom, if it divides 92 times, if it gets 92 hits from a neutron in a row, you wind up with 92.
Just lost you, Peter. We're just having a. Yep, you're back.
I'm back. Yeah, excellent.
It's just had a little bit of a break in transmission there.
We've got a whole bunch of electromagnetic storm activity going on outside in our part of the world at the moment. We've had a storm season, George, that's lasted 7 months. It normally lasts 6 weeks. This isn't a consequence of CO2, mate. That is because of the weakening magnetic field of the Earth. Oh, sorry. What I was talking about was the nuclear decay that produces the lighter elements. So hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen are all produced within the Earth. This is why we're never going to run out of water, because water is an elemental production continually produced within the Earth. Oil is the second most common liquid on the planet after water. So the whole artificial scarcity, first voiced by J.D. Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan in 1892, was to drive their prices up. That was before they'd established their plan, before they'd realized how effective hydrocarbons were going to be in making everyone's life better. But they still wanted to claim all of it for themselves and capitalize on it as much as possible. But so none of that is remotely accurate, just none of it. And so they know everything that's ever happened. They've probably got information from the advanced societies that built the underground cities in the Kadesha region of Turkey. They've probably got definitely got masses of information that are not available to our universities, even if they weren't controlled by the same money and power. And they want to be able to reduce our numbers exactly as they signaled to us on the Georgia Guidestones before they started getting too much publicity. They want to be able to reduce our numbers. And that's where the Wuhan flu came in. That's where the bioweapon vaccine came in. This is where all the mind control comes in. None of it is accidental. None of it is to our benefit. Almost all of our serving politicians, with a handful of exceptions, which is why I grieved when you called it quits in politics. So I thought, mate, we need every fighter we can. But I understand you had your reasons, but we need – this is one of the – another reason I stepped up. I thought, well, you know, I'm retired. I'm superannuated. Oh, I've got the time. I've got the knowledge. I'll get out there and spread the word. Whether I'm fit enough to do a third run, I don't know. It would depend, I guess, on the support I could muster. But if we don't start to, it's too late to wake the sheep, George. The sheep are just not going to be woken. Sometimes it actually hurts them so much to contemplate the fact that everything that they've ever believed is wrong. And in fact, the sheep with degrees, they've become so accustomed to the mental anguish of cognitive dissonance, of believing two things that obviously contradict each other, but believing them both nonetheless. They assume that that feeling of mental anguish is actually the feeling you get when you're smart, not when you're confused. So people that were high school dropouts, and admit, like, I've got a graduate certificate now, but when I was a 17-year-old, I dropped out of high school because I was having more fun with motorbikes and girls than I was with this rubbish that I was being taught. And I detected I was being taught rubbish all the way back to grade 7, George. I had a smoking hot grade 7 teacher. She was fresh out of the very first wave of teachers that came out of universities as opposed to teachers' college. She was giving us books that I still had until a cyclone took them out some years ago that were printed by no less an organisation than the Club of Rome, mate, about overpopulation, about pollution.
That far back? Wow.
Yep. That was 1973, 74.
Insidious, that far back.
I smelled a rat then. One thing I've got is a very good bull dung detector, and I guess that was why I was good at being a fraud investigator for the Dole office, while I was good at being a fire investigator for the fire brigade. If things don't stack up, there's probably a very good reason for it. And if people, like I say, when it comes back to the sheep, to finish that thought, our job now is to wake the lions, and the lions are listening to TNT radio. They're watching outsiders. They're reading the websites that don't follow the narrative. And there's a whole bunch of them in Australia that some of them don't always get everything right. Cairns News is a good local one that is very popular around the world. Then you've got the EZFKA, the Economic Zone, formerly known as Australia. you know, they're pretty good. XYZ.net.au. they're pretty good. Cauldron Pool, they're pretty good too. They've got a Christian TOTTnews.com. Michael Smith News.com. He was a former mainstream guy.
He's great, Michael Smith. Yeah. I mean, that's right. And all of these people, basically, they're pushing out information, which not misinformation or disinformation, as the government might claim. They're pushing out information which is vitally needed at this time to educate the lion. So I completely and utterly agree with you, Peter. We have reached the top of the hour, though, mate. I think we could go on talking for hours and hours and hours, and perhaps we will one day again. But I want to thank you for coming on and imparting a little bit of knowledge onto the listeners here at TNT Radio. It's been a brilliant discussion, Peter. God bless you.
Thank you, George. Your family. Thank you, sir.
And we'll chat again. Thanks very much, folks. That's all for George Christensen here on The George Christensen Show as part of TNT Radio.